Emma is the youth or children's worker in Elam in Coventry. And so without further ado, can we put our hands together and honour her and welcome her?
Thank you, thank you. I am Emma. Emma Bacon is my full name. That is my true name. It's a great conversation starter for kids. And they're like, "Your name's not Bacon. Do you eat yourself?" I'm like, "No, I don't eat myself." I oversee the additional needs ministry at Coventry Elim. And I also am the children's worker, full-time children's worker there. And basically, I've had more experience, I would say, with children with autism than other needs. I have worked with children with cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, and development delays. But my main experience is with children with autism. So I will try my best to do an overview. But because of the children that I have encountered the most are autistic, it may be more tailored towards autistic children. But I think you can get something out of it anyway. Our journey at Elim is ongoing. As our children grow, they change. They have days where they're fine, they come in. They have days where they're not so fine, and we have to support them a little bit more. So even though I'm standing up here talking with you, I'm on the same journey as you. We're still learning, we're still growing each day, and I hope that some of the stuff that we've done, I can share with you, and hopefully you can take at least one thing home. And when I got asked to do this talk, I was just asked, "Can you do a talk on working with children and young people with additional needs?" And I was like, "Yes, but what do you want me to say?" And it was like, "Whatever you want." Now, working with children and young people with additional needs is a massive scale. Like, you've all probably come with your own challenges, questions at different parts of the journey. So I thought the best way for me to tackle this was I posted a post on the Limitless Kids Facebook, and I asked people what it was that they wanted to know. So my talk is based on some of those questions, and then at the end there'll be a bit more Q&A, so you can do that. So this is more so what people have said they want to know. So the first thing people wanted to know is how we can support parents. I'm going to be going backwards and forwards to this and how to do this. So one of the best ways to support parents is to work with them, to work together. If anyone knows these children the best, it's the parents. They are with them 24/7. They have contact with many specialists. They have contact with the school. The school's probably shared with them techniques and things that they're doing with them at home. They can do with them at home. Those can then be shared with you to do in your setting. And find out as much information as possible about the child. So this can be in two formats. So they can, the first time they come in, you can ask them some questions up front, and then you can have a meeting with them and ask them some further questions. So some of the things that you could ask the parents, I'm just going to put them all up here so I don't have to keep... I've gone too far. So you could ask, how has... I'm going to use Jessie as my example today just because it's I don't want to use any real name. So how's Jessie's week been? Did he sleep okay? That is a very, very good question to ask when they come in the morning, because if a child has not slept the night before, their behaviour will be different. We all, well, I speak from my own call. If I don't sleep, I'm incredibly grumpy. And that's no different for our children. But the difference is a child who is nonverbal cannot express, "I am tired." So it comes out in their behaviour. So knowing he's not had a good sleep last night will give you a little bit more insight, and you can say, "Okay, so he's not had a good sleep. What would you suggest we do? Should we keep him in a quieter area? Should we do a certain activity with him? What would you suggest we do to make sure that Jesse is able to be okay in the session?" Ask the parent if the child has any likes, any interests. And also ask if there are any dislikes. Again, knowing this will help you to stop any triggers in the room. And on the topic of triggers, like, ask, are there any triggers that we should be aware of? So some children don't, like, you probably all know children, some children don't like loud sounds. So you might want to have a pair of ear defenders on hand just in case that child doesn't like the loud sounds. It may be that... with the sound thing, you might have music blaring as children come in. You might want to bring the volume of that music down slightly. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. Ask how the child's verbal communication is. There may be some words that the child uses, but they haven't used in your setting. I say this because we had a child once who I never heard him talk when he was in kids' church. And then I went over to look after him one time when mum had to go out for an appointment. And he turned around and he was like, crisps, chocolate, toilet. They're obviously things that he wants because he's like, oh, she's new. I might be able to get away with something. But he's never used any words in kids' church. So I just assumed he didn't have any verbal communication at all. So ask, like, what are the words that they use at home that we can encourage in kids' church or youth ministry? Ask what the child's strengths are. I'm very, very keen on bringing out the strength of the child. It's so easy just to focus on the weakness, the need of the child, but God has created them for far more than the need. He has created them for a purpose, and he's got a place for them in his kingdom, just like each and every one of us in this room. So drawing out their strengths and working on them is really key. If there's something that you're particularly struggling with in kids or youth church, ask if it's the same at home. So they may be struggling with biting, for example. It's the first thing that came in my head. If they're struggling with biting, say, Jesse has been struggling with biting today. Is this something that he does at home? Is this something that he does at school? If so, what is it that you do at school and home that we can then implement? Because consistency is like really key. So implementing the same thing as at home and at school is really key. Ask if the children have any siblings. So often siblings get overlooked because all the attention is on the child with the additional needs. So the sibling, if we know the child's got a sibling, we can invest in them and say, you're seen. Because I think it's really important that we show the siblings that they are seen and that we see them. Ask the parent if we can support them. Is there anything that we can support you with? Is there anything that we can pray for you? These are just like really simple questions that I'm sure you do already ask, but knowing these things are really, really key to the best care that you can give the child or the young person. I don't know about you, but we have some parents who are not very quick to say my child has an additional need. They're not diagnosed and they're very against, no, there's nothing wrong with my child. But I know that there's some things that they struggle with. So the way that I approach that is if there's something that they're struggling with, so they're not able to sit down, we're trying to get them to sit down and they're not sitting down, instead of going to the parent and constantly saying, is there something wrong with your child because they're not sitting down, not that you would do that, but as in like, instead of trying to get the diagnosis out of them, find out, so he's really struggling to sit down in kids' church. Like, is this something that happens at home as well? Because we obviously want him to like engage as much as possible. Is there anything you can suggest that we can do to support him? Because we want to give him the best support and care that we can. And by doing that, you're not saying your child's got an additional need. You're saying, like, they're just struggling with this one thing and we just really like to know what you would do in that situation. So, build that relationship up with the parent. I did that for 2 years. There was one child who I was pretty sure had autism, and I kept going to mum and I was like, oh, he's struggling with this. What would you do? She would give me an advice. I would do it. And then 2 years later, she came up to me. Once I'd built a relationship up with her, and she said, Emma, I need to tell you that my child's got autism. So it took 2 years. She knew that he had autism. It took 2 years for her to tell me because she was embarrassed. And it took a relationship. It took me showing her that I was willing to do whatever I can for her child to fit in, for her to say, my child's got autism. So keep persevering and building relationships with the parent and show them that you care. Even if you don't have resources or the facilities to do this, showing that you care will show the parent that, like, they're with me, they're not against me. Another thing is one-page profiles. Some of you may have seen these before. This is just one I created for our children. So these one-page profiles, again, it's just a little bit more information. So when a new child starts that has an additional need, we find out some information about them. I try to word the questions about the child, so things that make me worried. So if you have a young person and a child, like, I think it's really easy to go up to a young person, a child with autism or any additional needs, and speak instantly to the parent. But that child can and young person can hear you. So I would recommend saying, firstly, speaking to the young person and the child and saying who you are, like asking their name. And they might not be able to tell you name, but they're like, oh, they actually want to speak to me. And that's why I do it like this, because like, what am I worried about? What is my strengths? What is, and that may come from the parent, but it shows that actually I'm interested in the child. I'm not like dumbing you down because of your need. Like I want to hear from you. At Elam Coventry, we do something called Connect Plus, and we launched this a few years ago now. Connect Plus is a monthly meeting with our parents and children and young people. And basically it's a time, so we just changed this slightly. So this is now on a Sunday and it's a lunch. So after church, the parents gather together with their children and young people, they have lunch together. And then they split off. So the children and young people go into a room with a team, and that parents are in a room having a chat. And the idea of this is they build a community. They know that they're not alone. It's a space where they can pray. It's a space where they can be honest and real with each other. It's a space where they can share testimonies. But it's also a space where the team can get to know the children and young people a little bit more, in a little bit of a more controlled environment without everyone else there. This has been so key to everything that we have done in the kids ministry, and now we're launching this in the youth ministry as well. Purely because, like, okay, for example, on Sunday, I got introduced to a new family, first time in church. She was telling me that she has 3 children. One of them has autism. It's her first time walking in church because she didn't know whether she would be able to bring her child into church. And I had a chat with her and I said, why don't you stay for the lunch? Like, come and meet some other parents. And she was like, yeah, okay. Like, she was a bit unsure. She went in, came out at the end. She was like, Emma, I am coming back next week. She was like, I am so encouraged. I am so blessed by talking to these parents. I'm not alone. And this shows that they're not alone, that there's other people there on the journey with them. And it shows that we're on the journey with them as well. I also went to one of our parents' party. She had a birthday party. And when I was there, I was amazed to see every family there as well. And she called it her Connect Plus family. And she'd done an announcement and she said, I just want to thank everyone for what they've done over this year. And I want to thank my Connect Plus family for being with me. And my pastor was with me at the time, and we were both just like looked at each other and got a bit emotional, because it was like they'd formed a family out of this group that, for me, sometimes honestly seems like a bit of a burden every month, trying to get team, trying to organize. It's mad. It's Malzin from Elam Coventry. He'll know it's mad, but it's worth it. So that's one of the things that we do. And some of the parents arrange outings as well. So they go into different groups. There's a WhatsApp group. So they post in their prayer requests and share stories and stuff. And one of the other things that we're just about to launch, I haven't got it on there, is called Family Support. So I realized that I'm one person, and we support about 21 children with additional needs now at Coventry Elam. And it's really difficult for me, alongside my children's worker role, to make sure I contact every parent regularly and check they're okay. And if they're not there, check why they're not there, that they're okay. So what we're doing is we buddied up our additional needs team with a family. And the idea is that they check in on that family every now and then, ask if there's any prayer requests that they have. And then if they haven't been there for a while, they'll just be the eyes that look out and say, Emma, like, this family hasn't been here for a while. Can we just check in on them? Now, I realize that some of you struggle with team, and team is something I'm going to come on to in a minute. But this is something that doesn't necessarily need team. You have a whole congregation. And when you share the heart of this ministry and this vision with your congregation, there may be people in there that you can say, look, we've got a family that I really do with just having someone just like praying with them and checking they're okay. Would you be up for that? And there are people in our congregation who are part of that as well, who don't do kids or youth ministry. So that's another way of like going around that. So the next thing is communicating with children and young people with additional needs. So I'm just going to go through some points that might help you just help with communication. Clear, slow speech and deliberately saying what you want to say. Because we can say a sentence and it can mean one thing to somebody and it can mean one thing to somebody else depending on how you say it. So what I want you guys to do is I just want you to turn to the people next to you and I want you to say this sentence to each other, but I want you to put emphasis, say it a few times, but put emphasis on different words as you say it. So just turn to the person next to you, say the sentence, but put an emphasis on the different words.
I love this, like, at the front here, it's, like, beautiful.
Okay, so as you may have noticed, that depending on what word you put the emphasis on, changed the way what the sentence was trying to say. And that's just a little example of saying, just be really clear with what you want to say and emphasize what you actually want them to do. Another example of that is you can say, "Ah, that's cool." To a child with autism, you might be saying it's cold. Like, "I'm not cold. Like, it's not cold in here." But as you're saying, "Oh, no, that's great." Say, "Oh, that's good." Don't like use the abbreviated, I don't know if that's the right word. Don't use like, what's the word I'm talking? Slang. Yeah, don't use the slang. Just use the straight point, straight to the point word. Direct language, as I say, like using like no metaphors, fewer words, similar to what I just said. Give time to process. I don't know about you, but it takes me a while. I say I'm an introvert and everyone's like, "No, you're not, you're an extrovert." But I am actually quite introverted and it takes me a while to process. So I internally process and then I come up with what I'm going to say. For a child, I'm saying autism again, for a child of autism, it takes them longer to process than what it would for me or you. So just give them time. If they don't do it straight away, repeat it. Repetition is key. But when you repeat the sentence, keep the same sentence. So if you say, "Jesse, close the door." And if they don't do it, you say, "Jesse, I need you to close the door. Jesse, please, can you go over there and close the door? Like, Jesse, why aren't you closing the door?" That's a lot to process because you've given them loads of extra words to process in that. But just keep saying, "Jesse, close the door. Jesse, close the door. Jesse, close the door." It's simple and eventually, sometimes you have to do it for a long time, it will click. And sometimes it doesn't, but it does. Sometimes it doesn't always work. But you're eliminating that process time by not giving them too many words to do. Total communication. So total communication basically means backing up what you're saying with visuals. So this could be through signs or gestures in your hands and your body. It could be through photos and pictures. It could be through symbols, sometimes like Makaton symbols or British Sign Language. It could be through real objects. So you could have like an actual horse. Don't know why a horse came in my mind, but you could have a horse in front of you. So total communication. Some children prefer having visuals. I'm definitely a visual person. So if I see something, I remember it a lot easier. Visual aids, that's what I just said. Break down the instructions. So when communicating, try and break down what you're trying to say. So, for example, you want them to make a ladybird. If you say, here's your ladybird resources, I want you to cut out the ladybird, then I want you to stick the spots on, then I want you to colour in the eyes, then I want you to put the antennae on, then I want you to just put the legs on like this, and then I want you to bend them like this, they're going to forget everything you've just said. Go through it step by step. First, cut out the shape. Once they've done that, now stick on the spots. Once they've done that, now stick on the legs. It's given them time to process what you're saying and not giving them a massive bunch of information. It's the same of if you want them to go into a room or something like that. If you say, I want you to go into the room, I want you to find a chair at the front, I want you to sit down, I want you to wait for the person that comes in, and then I want you to, I don't know, do something else. Just say, go in the room, sit down. And when they're sitting down, then you can explain what's happening next. Try to keep the information as small as possible. And be specific. Like, what exactly do you want the child to do or the young person to do? Sometimes saying what you want them to do rather than what you don't want them to do is the better way around. So if you don't want a young person or child going on the stage, if you say, don't go on the stage, they hear stage, they're like, okay, I'll go on the stage. But if you want them to sit down, just say, Jessie, sit in. Like, you know they're about to go on the stage, but Jessie, sit in. Because that's what they'll hear. They hear sitting, and they're like, okay, I'm gonna sit. I'm not going to go on the stage. I'm going to sit. And again, that doesn't always work because children with additional needs are also very cheeky sometimes, and they don't always listen. But not saying, so say what you want them to do, not saying what you don't want them to do. Okay. Handling difficult situations. So this is a very big topic that I am still learning myself. So I'm only going to share with you some of the things that I've learned. The first thing is to stay calm. Don't panic. It can be really easy to be like, oh, they're hitting everyone, they're spitting, oh, like, I need to go and find someone. Just stay calm. Like, breathe, stay calm. And ask for help. I'm going to put them all up because it's annoying, keep going back and forth. So ask for help. You don't have to do it on your own. If you're on a one-to-one with a child, it's okay to ask for help. Sometimes if you are there when the situation has exploded, they won't respond to you. And sometimes by stepping back and someone else coming in, it actually works. And that's nothing against you. It's not that the child or young person doesn't like you. It just means they need a new face. They need someone else new in that situation. But don't have too many people around the situation. Sometimes within our kids' church, I get called up because something's happening and there's like four people around the child. Like, that doesn't say much for the other children that are in there, like who's with the other children. But it also, that a lot of children don't want to be confined and crowded by loads of people watching them. They just need to have the moment that they're having and then move on. So don't have too many people there, but be like, please ask for help. Call for the parent. In our setting, if a child begins to display behaviours of spitting or biting or pulling hair, we will call the parent. We know exactly where they're sitting, and we'll say, "Can you just come up and just help us to like calm down the situation?" They'll do that, and then they'll go back into church. We don't do that all the time. It's just on a extreme case because we don't want to keep calling the parent out every time they're like they're doing something that is maybe like looks a bit difficult. Like, we would try our best to diffuse the situation ourselves, but getting the parent in sometimes comes. Like on Sunday, one boy was trying to run into the main auditorium, and I knew if this boy was going to go into the main auditorium, we were not going to get him out. He was going to go on the stage, and it was just going to be. So I was like trying to stop him from going in, and I was like, "We just need to get mum. We just need to get mum because this is not working." So we got mum, and whether or not this was the answer or not, but she came out, gave him her iPhone. He went and sat down. He was fine. Whether or not giving him the iPhone was the right option, but he saw her, and then as soon as he saw her, he calmed down. She gave him the iPhone. He sat down, and then we were able to get that iPhone off of him and carry on. So that's just an example of calling the parent. Also, snacks. I don't know if people do snacks in their kids or youth ministry, but we have a particular boy that brings in snacks with him, and he has that snack during the lesson now, so we're trying to encourage that because he will sit down with the snack. So we're like lesson, snack. He knows that they come two and two, so that's a way to get him to sit down and listen. Have a safe space. Create a space in your settings where they can go if it becomes too much, if it becomes too loud. We actually turned the cupboard into a sensory room. It was a cupboard, had loads of junk, loads of storage in it. And I was like, can I turn it into a room? And they were like, do whatever you want. So I moved all the stuff somewhere else, and it's now our sensory room. So it's our safe space. If the room becomes too crowded, the children will go in there, and the young people use it as well throughout. And you might not have a cupboard that you can turn into a sensory room, but you might have a space in your corridor or in your all your churches will look different, but there may be a particular space that you can be like, okay, if it becomes too much in here, I'm just going to take them here and have some cushions and some lighting. At the end, you can have a look over here, but we've got our starlight, which is in our central room, with some things over there as well, which are in there. It's just that calm space when things get a little bit too much. Explain what's happening to the other children. This, again, is a whole topic, but it's okay to say, Jesse's upset. Jesse's upset at the moment. We're just going to give him some space. Like, it's obvious to their eyes that something's wrong. So ignoring the obvious is, like, let's just be real about it. If the situation is happening amongst the children or young people, we tend to take the children and young people away to another area of the room, just purely because in those moments there's kicking or someone is going to get hurt. So we move them away and we say, we're just going to give Jesse some space because he's just a little bit sad, and then we'll go back and join him. And that's okay to do. It's okay to talk to your other children. We all learn differently. Everyone in this room has a different way of thinking. Everyone in this room has a different way of processing. It's the same thing of, like, if you had a 20-year-old, so if you had a 2-year-old that went into a shop and they stripped naked, people would just be like, oh, it's a baby, that is fine. If a 20-year-old went to a shop and stripped naked, people would look and they would say, that's not okay. That's because there's different rules for different people. That's life. And children and young people need to learn that. They need to learn that actually different people have different rules for different processes, for different ages. So it's okay to say, we're just going to give them some space. It's okay to say this child has autism, but don't belittle the children with additional needs in front of them. It's okay to talk about it in front of them, but don't belittle them. Just do it as a whole thing of, like, we all learn differently. We all hear from God differently. We all are made differently. And some of us just need a little bit of extra time to process. Some of us prefer to walk around the room, and that helps us to process. And if one of your children or young people say, well, I like to walk around the room and process, you can be like, no. just have honest conversations with them. Try to eliminate the situation before it happens. If you see a child covering their ears, it's probably because it's too loud. Give them some ear defenders, that could help. If you see a child starting to touch themselves, it may be because they need a toilet. So say, like, wee wee, toilet, whatever word they use, and try to take them to the toilet before the accident happens or they show something that they shouldn't show. So look out for those signs before something happens, because it will help to eliminate what happened. Naming the emotion. This is something that I learned recently, actually, at some autism training that a friend did. If a child with additional needs is crying, call out the emotion to them and tell them. Say, like, Jesse is sad. Jesse, you're crying. Jesse is sad. You don't have to explain why they're sad, but you're acknowledging how they feel in a simple way. Saying, Jesse's crying. Jesse's sad. Or it may be, Jesse's hitting. Is Jesse angry? You're just acknowledging how they're feeling, and you're like, okay, I'm here for you. Like, I know you're feeling this, and I'm here for you. So name that emotion. Share with the parent what has happened. If you haven't called them out, just share the struggles that they had. But be really sensitive in this, because parents hear negative information about their children on a daily basis and their young people on a daily basis. And we don't want to just be people that tell them what's wrong. We want to tell them what's good. So if you see great things about your children and young people, share it. But if something happens, you can also share it. Just do it in a sensitive way. Don't do it in front of other parents. Like, call them and just say, like, they struggled with this. But share that sandwich thing. We all know the sandwich. Something good, something bad, something good. Like, just give them some positive stuff to go with that. And review. What I mean by review is if something happens, talk about why it happened, what you could maybe do to change that next time. With the situations, we've had situations before where a child has had a moment within the other children in our kids' church, and we couldn't do anything. Like, there was nothing that we could do. We just had to try our best to get the parent in. Some children did get their hair pulled. Some children did get hit. I went home feeling rubbish about my morning because I was like, I could have done more. But me trying to, like, say I could have done more didn't change the situation. It happened. So how can we try and change that for next time? What can we do for next time? If this happens, how can we stop this from happening? Is this something we can ask the parent again to try and stop happening from next time? It's a lot of information. I hope that I'm not talking too fast. I've got one more question that I was going to bring up. And then I'll kind of have some space for you guys to ask anything outside of that you want to. So volunteers, the big question, what do I do when I don't have volunteers? So I'm going to bring these all up. Building a one-to-one support team starts with you. Where is your heart? Like, what is priority to you? And what is God saying to you about this? Because you can't share a vision if you don't have it yourself. Like, if you just want to do something because it's something nice, then that's not going to draw people in. You need to get your heart in the right place and think, okay, why do I want to do this? What does this mean for our ministry? What does this mean for our church? What does this mean for God's church? And think for yourself first, what does this mean for me? Where am I at on my vision in this? And then once you know where you are at, you can go to your leadership and you can say, this is where we're at. This is how many children we're supporting. These are the struggles that we're having. This is the team that we have. If that's non-existent, be real. I don't have anybody. Share with them why it's important. Like, believe it or not, some pastors don't understand the importance of having an additional needs ministry. They're like, but we can support any child that comes in. It's fine. We can do it. We can't. hands up in here. How many of you actually are supporting at the moment children or young people with additional needs? Okay, so quite a few of you. So you will know it's not easy. It's not easy, but it's worth it. Like, it's worth it. And we need to share that with our pastor. And we need to say, this is why it's worth it. These are the stories, the testimonies that have come out of it so far. But we can't do it without team. And we need your help. Sometimes people listen to the pastor more than they do the children or the youth worker. So getting the pastor into that will also help with that. When we first launched our additional needs ministry, when I prepared this, actually, I had one of those moments because I found a plan from 2015, an additional needs ministry plan. And on that plan was exactly what I just said. It was the vision, what we currently have, team we currently had, which was none, the children we're supporting, just a load of information. And I took that to my pastor in 2015 and I said, this is where we're at and I need your help with it. And I was thankful enough. He didn't really understand, like, he didn't, it wasn't something that was on his heart as such. Obviously, he's a pastor of inclusion, but, like, it's nothing that he'd thought about. So I had to go with him with this plan. And but he said, okay, let's do this. Like, let's do an announcement from the front and let's call people in. And how many years is 2015 to 2023? Eight, thank you. So 8 years later, we're still learning. But we're growing because the pastor, our pastor got behind us and he pushed it. So it's no longer a children's ministry thing. It's now a whole church thing. Our whole church, including the youth ministry, the students, the older generation, the younger generation, they're all on board because the vision has been shared. So if they see these children walking around, they'll say hi as well. It's not just a children or a youth worker's role. It's a whole church's role. And sharing that with the pastor helps. But then I also found reviews. So every year I review the ministry and I say, okay, this is where we're at now. What do I want to implement next? And I take that again to my pastor and I say, this is where we're at. We're running out of team again. We need to do another call. And we recently did a call, which was probably one of my favorites. I got a parent to come and share what it meant for her to have an additional needs ministry, and like she was incredible at just sharing what it meant to her. Like, this same mum had been turned away from many churches in Coventry because they said that her child was naughty, which breaks my heart, because a church should be the place where every child and young person or anybody should be able to walk in and not feel pushed away. And this parent had been turned away from multiple churches because her child was naughty. Her child was not naughty, he was autistic. And he just needed someone to love him and to see him. We had no idea what we were doing. We didn't have a team, but we had mum. And mum, when we told mum, we don't know what we're doing, but if you're willing to work with us, we were willing to grow this. Then we were able to develop what we have, and that's happened over years with the updates and stuff. So, and when she'd done this call, at the end, I stood at the front waiting for team. You know, when you do that call and you're waiting for team to come and you're like, see people walking past you and you're like, where's the sign-ups? And this parent came up to me. And I know this parent. He has 3 children in our church already. And he said to me, oh, hi, Emma. Like, I know that my children come to kids ministry, but what you don't know is I have another child. And I was like, oh. And he was like, but he'd been coming to our church for about a year. He's like, but I haven't been bringing him because I don't know if he's allowed to come because of his needs. Honestly, my heart broke. I found out that mum and dad had been alternating each week bringing him into church, so they hadn't been to church together for a whole year. And he said, once he heard this mum share, he was like, I feel comfortable now to bring my child in. And that next week, he brought him in, and he's the cutest child. Like, he's amazing. He's an amazing kid, and he comes every week now. And you can just see mum and dad coming into church together, and it's just worth it. We didn't have a one-to-one for him, but we did what we could to allow him to come in, and now, thankfully, we do have a one-to-one. But the calls up front are not just to draw the congregation into the vision and what you have for it, but it's to show these parents that are hiding that it's not okay to come out of hiding. Like, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Your child is loved. Your child is seen by God. They're made by God. Like, they've been formed the way they are for great purpose. And it's your role, every one of us in here, to bring that out. Whether you are qualified or not, you do not have to be qualified to support and love a child with additional needs. You don't have to know what you're doing half the time. I don't know what I'm doing half the time. But you just have to go with the flow, review, keep reviewing, keep informing your pastor of the struggles that you're having. Keep calling people to come and help. Share with your church regularly. Make it a priority in your church. I'm sure kids ministry or youth ministry, sometimes in your church, you may feel like you are the ministry in the basement. And we've gone through many years of trying to bring that into that's not the truth. Like, we are a whole church. Like, everyone is part of this church. But maybe it's time that we start talking about inclusion and saying that actually this is a priority in our church. We want everyone to come in this building, and we want them to feel welcome no matter what their need, no matter what they look like, no matter where they're from. Like, this is a place where everyone is accepted, and that again starts with you. Testimonies are massive, like sharing testimonies of things you've seen happen in your children and young people with the congregation. It doesn't just have to be you on the stage. Like, if you have children with additional needs or parents available, ask them if they'll come and share their testimonies. And why not get a child up? And I know some of you are probably thinking, how would that work? So we actually did that a few years ago, and it was the most nerve-wracking but also amazing thing we did. We got a little boy called Edward, and he's now in youth and doing amazing. And he came up with his dad to share what he loved to do in Powerhouse at the time. We were called Powerhouse. And I actually found a clip of this, so I wanted to play it to you, if that's okay, to show you that it's possible. He went on the stage. He wanted to touch all of the tech. Like, I was like, I was sitting there in the front, and I was like, oh no. But his dad was with him, so it was a controlled environment. But this is like basically what could happen if we allow space.
Can I have Edward and his dad Agricola on stage? And this is Edward's dad, Agricola. And so, Agricola, I've got a question for you. What does it mean as a parent to know that people are supporting your child?
Well, it's quite amazing in that you see the children coming in, and there are certain things which, when you are out there in the world, you think like there are some limits as to what they can do and what they can't do. But when they go to Powerhouse, they're given the chance to do everything just like any other child. There's no limit as to what they can do. They can sing, they can jump, they can dance. Everything is allowed. And also knowing that as a parent, I can actually come into church and actually sit in here, knowing that my child is also benefiting by also being involved in other church activities with other children. Thank you.
So, we don't expect you to take our word for it. We're going to ask Edward. So, Edward, what do you like to do in Powerhouse?
I like the toys, singing the songs, and doing the memory verse. I like doing arts and crafts. I like the freedom song. I dance with David, Kiki, Asha, Brian.
And Edward, would you to sing a bit of that freedom song?
I let the cat in, see there's a cat in, because of you guys, I'm so free. They came for tickets, they came for booty, I've got space, go to be calling me. Whoa, this is the city of whoa. Now you stop that door, when you stop the sun, who's going to go to all the street?
Edward, are there other things you like to sing in Powerhouse?
His name gives up. His name gives up the power. His name gives up the victory. His name gives up the power. His name gives up the victory.
Video goes on and he shares the Lord's Prayer and shares some other stuff, but giving him that space automatically drew everyone in, and they were like, they saw the person that they would be supporting, and that's when people came. So share with them who they will be supporting, and yeah, you'll grasp the hearts of people, the right people, I believe, as well. So I do have other questions that people had asked me that I can go through, but we've got half an hour. So has anyone got any? It's always that thing when people ask me questions, and I'm like, whatever, don't know the answer. Okay, has anyone got any questions that they have specifically for their ministry? Or okay, do you want me to bring the mic to you? Okay, I'll come.
Hello, we don't have an additional needs ministry. My church is like maybe 35 people on a good day, but we have like a limited sort of, like, we're trying to get a younger team sort of together to, for, you know, like children's and youth and stuff. So I believe God can equip the call. You don't need to be qualified. But what would you do if like a volunteer didn't fully grasp like someone's condition, for example, like autism, and would use like functioning labels, or would say like, oh, what's wrong with this person, and language like that wasn't so positive? Like, how would you address that? Because that would be my fear. I wouldn't want to be like derogatory to the person who's stepping up to try and serve if it's not productive. Does that make sense? Sorry.
Yeah, it's a good question. So if it's a specific team member and you don't feel like it's a conversation you can have with them individually, remind the whole team. So say, again, it starts with you. Reshare the vision of what you want us to be about. And just if it's a specific thing, so they're communicating wrong, just say, this is the language that we're going to use when we're talking about these children or young people. This is how we're going to describe, share with them as a whole. If it's a particular team member that you can have a conversation with, just be like, some people don't know. Some people need telling. So just say, it's probably best we don't use that word to describe it. We're going to kind of use this word. And in a nice way, you can share that. But also you can do training, whole team training. I've actually got a slide up here. So for connecting and training, there's some suggestions up there. So Urban Saints, Mark Arnold, in the early days, he helped me amazingly. Any questions, anything I had, he was there on an email helping me with the specific needs that we had. He also does training, all-inclusive training, and he will come to your church and he will do training for your team. So that can He will also help with the language as well that's used there and what that's about. Growing Hope, Naomi Graham. I've only recently got to know Naomi and she's incredible. What she does with Growing Hope. So Growing Hope is it's a free therapy for families in churches, but she also offers training as well. So I would very much encourage you to have a look at Growing Hope. Unique Connections, my friend Beverly Samways. She has an incredible business that she's just launching, which gives training for children, young people, adults with any kind of complex need, and also in self-harm as well. And she is an incredible communicator. She does our autism training for our team every year. She spoke at Belong last year. And she's also someone who would come into your church and do training, especially if you're starting up a ministry. It's good to get everyone in right at the beginning and say, this is where we're going. Because what better way to start something than say, this is where we're heading, this is where we're going. And myself, New Wine, Accessible Church, if you go onto that website, there's some resources and information on there. And I've put me on there because if you ever need any support or any questions, just drop me an email and I would be more than happy to help you. And also, we have a conference called Belong. We launched it last year. It was actually meant to be a one-year thing, but the feedback from it was far better than I thought. I thought it was going to be about 30, 40 people. It ended up being 100 people. Many people said they came away from that really blessed. So if you're able to come to this, it's kids and youth training. It's not just kids ministry. We have some incredible speakers like we did last year. and it's going to be amazing. There's an early bird ticket up to the end of the month, but that's also something that you can take your teams along to. I'm trying not to look at Shiv right now because I said that to her earlier and she was like, but I spoke last year. Was I not incredible? You were incredible, Shiv, but we've got another bunch of incredible speakers. Yes. I didn't put it on there. It's the 17th of June. 17th of June, yeah, at Elam Coventry. It's going to be a great... If you scan that barcode, it'll take you to the website. It'll show you all the information that you need. So training, in answer to your question, training and just sharing with the whole group. Okay. How's it going to be different? It's not going to be different as such. It's obviously different speakers. It's different content. We're going to have a bit more discussion, a few more testimonies, we're going to have a longer extended time of worship at the end. Because I think for me, it's really important not to just hear the information, but to apply the information to our hearts. So before we leave the conference, we will give it to God. So it's similar. It's a similar structure. Yeah, exactly. There you go. Hello.
Hi. Really practical question. It's a three-part question. So where do you get sensory things from? So where would you buy it from? Two, what do you look for in a sensory item? And three, what is the benefit of a sensory thing to, yeah.
Miss Nelson. It's okay. Right, first question. Where do you get sensory toys from? Anywhere. B&M, I go, whenever I go shopping, I look for something that feels nice. I'm a sensory person myself, so anything I go past that touch that feels nice, I'll touch it. So if you're wearing a soft coat on, I'll just stroke you. Anywhere, B&M, like cleaning, like sponges, they're really great for like pressing. It doesn't have to be a really expensive thing. I wish I had it on the screen, but we've created a board in our sensory room, and on that board, there's just such random objects on there. It's like a lock just from a charity shop. There's a sponge. There's pegs. Anything that you can manipulate with your hands. Anything that will help with that. It's a calming mechanism. I don't know if you've ever like played with something. It just helps. I don't know the technical term for it, but there's the different senses in your body, and it helps you to be aware of where your body is. I can't remember that. I wish I could tell you what the word was, but this there's a sense basically in our body that helps us to be aware of where we're putting our foot or where our hand is. And children with autism don't always know that. So if you see them like waving their hands or going like this, it's because they're making themselves aware that body part is there. And that's exactly what a sensory toy does. It just helps to like manipulate your hand. Over here is a bunch of sensory stuff. So there's a light. So this is like an infinity light. You often see them like putting their faces like right up against it. There is like these things. These are amazing. These are all from Amazon. So you can go to Amazon and get these from there. The best thing we ever bought. Like every child seems to like these. They're very weird. Stress balls, poppets. And like little things that you walk on. So you can have a look at all of these, but Amazon, B&M, any shop you go into really, you don't have to spend a fortune. And you probably don't want to spend a fortune, because if your ministry is anything like mine, you buy something and then the next week they're all missing. kids like to pocket things without you realizing. And also they get thrown and broken. So don't spend too much money on them. You can get them in any other shop, any shop really. Was that all the questions that you asked? Okay. The socks. What? Oh, the body socks. Yeah, and the weighted blankets as well are good. If you use a weighted blanket, talk to the parent first, because having that on the child too long can be damaging for them. So check to see if they use a weighted blanket at home first and then give it to them. Is there any other questions? Mal, that's a great question. I think it's something that we are still journeying with. So we're just trying to implement the same things as we're doing in Kids for Youth. We gathered all of the parents together and we asked them what they wanted out of youth, because the way our youth works is the 7 and 8s have Sunday, and then the year 9s, and then they all have youth church in the week. Midweek has been more challenging for us, but we kind of got there on a Sunday now. So they have a one-to-one. Our ministry has emerged into a youth and a kids ministry now, not just a kids ministry. Anyone on that one-to-one team will either be with kids one-to-one or youth one-to-one. It's not like you're coming onto ministry to be with kids, you're coming on ministry to be with youth. We'll write in there and we'll be like, we need a one-to-one with this child, they're in youth, and then they'll come and help. So the one-to-ones are really key still. The youth come in, they go into worship, and then they go out for their session. So we reserve a section of the church for the families, because for them it's easier to get out if they need to. So being at the front, if they turn up late, which some say sometimes they do because it's difficult to get out of the house, going up the front would not be good for them. So we reserve a space at the back. Communication. Checking if they're going to be there all the time. I have regular talks with Joe and Mal about the children, informing them of them. And also just reassessing What do the youth do? How can we support that? Having a section at the back with some paper that they can like mind map the session. There is one boy who, when he was in kids' church, he always used to like blocks, but his dad says now he's in youth, he doesn't want him to have blocks. So we took the blocks away, and at the back now he's starting to have worksheets and crosswords, and he'll sit at the back, so he's still listening. But also having a space next door if it's too much in that room. So it's the same sort of things in kids. Mal, do you want to come? I'm going to throw you on it. Do you have anything on that? Because Mal does the youth work at Elam Coventry, and kind of, do you have, you don't, it doesn't matter. Go for it.
All right, I'm Mal, nice to meet you. One thing that I've seen Emma do really great at our church is if you have a separate children and youth group in that last year, don't just create a safe space for them as in a place where they can be, but maybe already introduce them to the people that they're going to be surrounded with in the year to come. That can just be the youth leader or some one-to-one leaders from the older group, or maybe just people that stand out so that they don't feel like everything's too overwhelming for them.
Yeah, and on that note, another thing we did is we created a transition booklet. So I got off of Joe photos of the youth room, photos of what their routine looked like, and I created a routine book. I got some pictures of the youth team and put them in the book, and their names, and then I gave that to the parent, and they were at home and said, this is Joe, this is Mal, this is the room that you're going to, this is what you'll do, because routine is really good for children to know what's happening. So just pre-warning, like Mal said, just introducing them weighed before they go up. So Edward, for example, when he moved up to youth, he already knew Mal and Joe because they would come up to kids' church and see him and stuff. So just working with your youth and kids worker working together in that transition, and how you would with any other child, you work with them to transition. I don't know if that answers. Does that answer? Okay. Yeah. In terms of the what? Sorry, I can't hear. The ear defenders. So we have ear defenders in our space already. We have about two or three. But if there are specific children that have ear defenders, they tend to bring them with them. I would really suggest getting a pair in your setting, because even if you don't know the child, if they're holding their ears, It probably is because of the loudness. And some children don't want to wear ear defenders either. And that's when you have to start thinking about turning the music down. And one thing I always say is we don't change the child to fit the setting. We change the setting to fit the child, because we're not trying to change the child. We're trying to create a setting where they can walk in and be a part of it. So if you've already got those facilities in place, it's good. Like sensory toys, you might not have any children with additional needs, but if you've got them there, it's like you've got them ready and you're saying, look, we don't currently have this, but we're ready for when this happens. Does that help?
I was just going to share with you that last year I did three bridging sessions for the year sixes going into year seven who were going to be part of youth. So I did those bridging sessions. So the children with additional needs just did the same thing. So they were familiar, but like you said, preparing them before is helpful. So on that note, would you say it's worth the volunteer is doing the one-to-one with the child? Would you say it's worth keeping that volunteer, if they're happy, to transition with them so they've got the same one-to-one?
Yeah, if you can keep the same one-to-one with them, it will help with consistency. That is a really good thing. And that's why we've merged the two teams together for that particular reason. Keeping the same person with them is key. And like you were saying, you can do the transition sessions, so take them in a little bit earlier, like a few sessions before, just so they can see that. But yeah, if you can, if you can't, it's just a rebuilding of relationship. But if you can keep the same person with them, that's probably a good shout. In my head, we were finishing at 4, but I've just realised it's not 4, it's 2:15. So it doesn't mean like, I've got plenty of time, and then I haven't. So we actually have run out of time, but I'm more than happy to answer any questions and try my best to help you in whatever way that is. Feel free to have a look at all the stuff over there. The leaflets and stuff to the right, feel free to take. All the stuff on the left is mine, so if you could just look at it, would be great. Feel free to ask anything. I think we've got a break now, but yeah, thanks.